Stay tuned now for CBS Mystery Theater at 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. I'm sure you will agree that almost every religion holds that the soul is immortal and recognizes a life after death. However, we're going to be telling you about people who believe in reincarnation, and they have a somewhat different approach to immortality. Those who believe in reincarnation are convinced that your soul lives on in another person's body in a later life. Some men and women even claim they remember bits and pieces of their former lives.
I see a gallows. It's a hanging. I can hear the creak of the gibbet and the rattle of chains. I hear them plainly. There are people watching. People dressed strangely. Dressed in clothing of a different century. Some of them are eating and drinking. They're enjoying watching a man hang. A man like me. Me. David Matson, who lives today. I see them and they're hanging. And I know I was there. I was there.
Mystery drama, Terror on the Heath, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Shepard Strudwick. It is sponsored in part by Contac, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your code to Contact, the sooner the better.
The common cold is a rotten thing. You miss so much. Sneezing, drips, and congestion can drag you down. Then ask yourself the Contact question. 6 or 3 or 1? You'd need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 ounces of Cold's liquid, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 Contact for up to 12 hours continuous relief of those symptoms. That's daytime, then nighttime relief. Both the others have things for aches and fever, and the liquid, something for coughs. Not found in Contact 600 tiny type pills.
Give your cold to Contact.
6 or 3 or 1. Take Contact. Only as directed.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau knows.
Oh, dear. All of this furniture is so beautiful. Look at this beautiful leather chair and this gorgeous oak table. And the prices are so low, I don't know which one to buy first.
I'll help you, madam.
But who are you?
I'm the man from the Better Business Bureau. Listen carefully. New federal regulations require that furniture be properly labeled, describing what it's made of, plastic, wood, veneer, and so forth. Be sure to read the labels on the furniture. They'll help you.
Oh, I see. Why, look, the label on this marble table says made of marble dust. No wonder it's cheaper. Oh, thank you for telling me.
Think nothing of it, little lady. Just passing along another consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Are you a browser? I mean a browser in a bookstore. If you are, you will readily acknowledge that bookstores are sectioned off with books in various classifications. One of the largest sections has become the how-to books. On those shelves, the reader can find a book that will tell him how to do almost anything, from painting or sewing to making a harpsichord. Everything, that is, except a book telling a man how to explain to his wife that he's leaving her.
David, darling, I didn't know this was serious.
Very serious.
But whatever it is, we'll weather it. We've had quite a few ups and downs in 10 years of marriage. We'll handle it together.
That's just it. This is something that you'll have to handle alone.
I don't understand.
Look, Jan, I don't know any other way of saying this. I'm going to leave you.
You mean that, don't you?
Yes, I'm sorry.
All right, David. Why?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell me? David, look at me. I'm the woman you love. At least I think you love me for 10 years. You're not going
to... I still love you, Jan, I swear.
Then why are you leaving?
Because I have to.
Have to?
You won't have a thing to worry about. I'll take care of you and the children just as if I were living here.
I just don't believe this whole scene. It's like something out of Alice in Wonderland.
Or Edgar Allan Poe.
What?
I think $2,500 a month should cover everything. But if you need
more...
What
did you mean about Edgar Allan Poe?
Nothing. Is $2,500 going to be...
You're using words as a smokescreen to hide the truth. We've never done that.
I guess there's no way a man can ever tell a woman he's leaving.
All I want is the reason why you're leaving.
That's just what I can't tell you. What are you going to tell the children?
Isn't that your job? You're the one who's leaving. Oh, David, this isn't like you. What's happened?
I wish it was something simple and less cruel, like being able to say... Jen... I've fallen in love and I want a divorce, but it isn't like that at all.
Then what is it like?
A horror story.
No secretary's going to tell me that Dave Matson's not into me. He'll see me and he's going to...
It's all right, Miss Manners. I'll see Miss Danson. Come in, Lon.
Oh, thanks. Now, what's this business about your leaving Jan all about?
I suppose this couldn't be avoided.
Why would you want to avoid me, your best friend? What is all this stuff about horror stories and Edgar Allan Poe?
Oh, it's just a figure of speech.
Oh, sure. Just enough to make you walk away from what I know was a good marriage.
Thanks, Lon.
And you're going to tell me why you're doing it.
But only if you give me your solemn promise that you won't tell Jan or Cecily.
But that's exactly...
I know. That's exactly why you came. To find out and try to help. To tell Jan. But that's the one thing you can't do.
Okay. You have my word.
I'd like you to look at these photostatic copies of English newspapers of the 1850s.
Are you kidding?
Read them.
Hampstead Heath, terror strikes again. Vicious killer claims 8th victim. 9-year-old girl stabbed to death. Look, David, I don't see what these...
Go on.
Well, but these are just more of the same. Police baffled by Heath knifings. Inspector Gregory of Scotland Yard brands slasher as sadist. Mm.
That's enough to give you the general idea.
Yes, it's also enough to confuse me thoroughly. What the devil?
The devil, that's a good word. Ever hear of reincarnation, Lon?
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. You're not going to try to make me believe that you...
are the 20th century reincarnation of this madman. And that should make it obvious why I must leave Jan and cannot tell her why.
And you believe this on the basis of these newspaper clippings?
Not quite, Lon. There's more, much more. It was incredible to me at first.
When was first?
About 6 months ago.
Hmm.
I read a book by Robert Ripple, a book that was a factual account of the lives of 3 notorious criminals of the 19th century. I was impressed by the writing and by the author, an assistant curator of the 19th century wing of the Museum of English History. There was one criminal in particular that fascinated me. I somehow felt I knew him.
This Hampstead Heath knifer?
Right. And that was when I had the first dream.
Dream?
Yes. I had a few drinks with Bob Ripple before coming home, and we talked about some changes. And I dreamed I saw Hampstead Heath quite clearly. It's really a forest, you know. And then along a walk outside the forest, I saw a woman's figure. I ran after her, and she turned to face me with her hands outstretched. Not to welcome me, Lon. To ward me off. And when I saw her face, it was streaming blood. Blood from knife slashes. And then I woke up.
All right, all right. So you had a nightmare. That doesn't prove...
That was only the first. They began to come more and more frequently, and in greater and more monstrous detail, with women and young girls and blood and... I don't want to open it up.
Well, all right, all right. I'll grant you it's pretty rough, David, but still...
Okay, come on around behind my desk. What do you see in the drawer?
A knife.
Not just any knife, Lon. That's a switchblade with a spring. Lethal and illegal.
Okay, when did you get it and why?
I don't remember buying it, and I have no idea of how it got there. But I distinctly remember the first time I saw it there. It was the day after I had my face slapped by a girl I'd never seen in my life and been called a murderer.
What?
I was coming back from a lunch with Bob Ripple, the author of the book that opened the floodgates. A rather attractive girl in her early 20s approached us. I don't know exactly how it happened. But suddenly we found ourselves face to face and started to indulge in that ridiculous waltz of both stepping the same way to get out of each other's way.
Oh, I know, I know.
Suddenly she looked full at me and hissed, "Murderer!" And fainted right there on the sidewalk.
Well, she was sick.
That was what Bob Ripple kept telling me as he hustled me away. But why... Why would she call me a murderer?
Well, I don't know. She's the one with problems. There's nothing wrong with you.
Lon, do you think it's possible that maybe this girl was the reincarnation of one of this killer's victims, and she recognized me as this killer?
Oh, no, I don't think it's possible, but obviously you do.
It was the next day that I saw the knife in my desk.
Look, Dave, look, you're in a state.
How would you like to see a face, Lon, my face? My face on the picture of a 19th century killer.
What?
Come with me and I'll show it to you. Lon, this is Robert Ripple, assistant curator of the 19th century wing of this museum.
Ah, nice meeting you.
Pleasure.
Bob, on our way to the room with the photographic exhibits, would you fill Lon in?
Glad to. This particular exhibit started because of my interest in the three notorious criminals of the era. Naturally, I collected all the newspaper clippings, stories, drawings, and photographs I could find and placed them in the room along with other items that are germane to the collection. Now, here are exhibited the daguerreotypes of some of the fabulous characters of the period, along with the criminals.
And here, Lon, take a look at this daguerreotype and tell me what you think.
Let me see. Well, good-looking guy, nice face. And if you want me to say he looks like you, I'll say it. There's a great resemblance. All right, who is he?
You tell him, Bob.
That man is Charles Mason, otherwise known as the Terror of Hampstead Heath, the killer who was hanged at Tyburn.
December 9th, 1841. I can remember. I can almost hear.
David.
Shh. Let him go back. Let him remember. You can hurt him if you try to bring him back now. I can hear the wind and the creak of the gibbet. And the chains. And the people shading their eyes against a cold sun, looking up to see what kind of monster was suspended in air, paying with his life the slashed and bleeding bodies of the women he had mutilated.
Good Lord, have you seen him like this before, Ripple?
Only once.
So what do we do?
Nothing. If it follows the pattern of the other time, he'll come out of it soon.
He's coming around.
I'm sorry. I guess I made a fool of myself.
You couldn't help it, Dave.
Well, Lon, what do you think?
Well, self-hypnosis.
What?
Self-hypnosis. You read Ripple's book. It impressed you. You became involved in the several hours you were here. You saw that daguerreotype that resembles you. And now you've hypnotized yourself into believing that you're a reincarnation of a murderous madman.
I don't blame you for not wanting to believe I'm the reincarnation of a killer like Charles Mason.
Look, what just happened was frightening, but not necessarily any proof that you're right. Mr. Ripple, Did you write about the hanging of Charles Mason?
Oh, certainly.
And there was nothing Dave said that he couldn't have gotten from reading your book, huh?
Yes, that's right. Or some of the other books I showed him. There have been many graphic descriptions of the hangings at Tyburn.
Ah, well, there you are, Dave.
I wish you were right.
Dave.
Yes?
I've thought of something that might just solve your friend's problem.
All right, let's hear it.
One of the most horrible of Mason's crimes was the murder of a young lady named Letty LeGros in 1837. Her nude corpse was found on Hampstead Heath, horribly butchered. Her clothes were never recovered.
Oh, what are you trying to say?
If Dave could remember what clothes Letty LeGros was wearing when
But how can we check out whether I'm telling the truth? I can give some kind of a description, but you just said nobody ever...
You'll have to trust me, Dave. I believe there might be a clue if you're willing to give it a try.
Of course. Shall we go back to the gallery?
No, you stay here. I'll go fetch the daguerreotype of Mason.
It's hard to see because there's a storm brewing. I see the leaves blowing and the trees bending. Ah, there's something else. A figure. A woman.
Oh, please. I mustn't slip or fall. He's following me. I know he's following. Oh, dear God. Help me. Help me.
I see something glowing. A dress. Yes. It's a dress, a long dress. The girl is holding it up as she's running. I have to catch
it. He's gaining. He's closer. Oh, I can see the gleam of the knife.
Dress. What color is the dress, David? Can you see?
She's gone now. Gone.
The color of the dress. Was it white?
No, not white. It was yellow. A yellow dress with a pale matching scarf and a lace handkerchief. The handkerchief is white, but the dress is yellow.
There have been some fairly convincing arguments on the side of reincarnations. There are a number of reputable people who insist they can recall bits and portions of a life lived in another time. I know one young lady who vividly recalls a life as a waitress in Jamestown during colonial days. But I don't know of anyone who can recall being a murderer. I'll be back shortly with Act Two. When you buy a mid-sized car, you expect certain things from it. Mainly, a reasonable combination of comfort and economy. Well, friend, Buick has a mid-size to meet your expectations. The 1975 Century Regal. It's a joy to look at, a joy to ride in, and Buick's new V6 engine makes it a joy to drive, especially past gas stations.
Buick Century Regal, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Sure, I've heard that phrase, give to the college of your choice. Good idea. And I know all colleges need more money, what with inflation and all. It's just that since I graduated, I've been so busy, not just with my career, but with the community affairs, too, I haven't found the time to reevaluate.
Take the time now and give more to the college of your choice. Now.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Some people think we play ping pong all day. They're wrong. The USO isn't all fun and games. Today, the USO has millions of problems like this one in Germany.
My family's going crazy living in a tiny apartment. Where can we live?
Today's USO has millions of problems like this one in Asia.
I'm hooked on drugs. Where can I get help?
Or this problem in Athens.
Our marriage is breaking up. Can you help us?
Today's USO has little time for ping pong. We've got serious work to do. We've got lots of new problems here and overseas. The problems are big. How big? Well, if someone asks you, who needs the USO? Tell them,
we do! We do!
Over 5 million American military personnel and their families need today's USO. And because we get no government funds, we need all your support. Please give to USO through the United Way or local USO campaign.
people go to museums to view the works of art. David Matson took his best friend, Lon Henderson, to a museum to prove to Henderson that he, Matson, was really the reincarnation of a monstrous killer of the 19th century named Charles Mason. He showed Lon a daguerreotype of Mason, and Lon was impressed by the resemblance, but he demanded more positive proof.
Bob, you said there might be some clue. You could learn something if I identified some clothes that a girl was wearing.
I did.
Did you find the clue?
I'm afraid we did, Dave.
Afraid? That means you believe that Dave is the reincarnation of Charles Mason?
I told you the clothes that Letty LeGros wore when she was slashed to death have never been found. What I didn't tell you was that some 6 or 7 years after her murder, a fine piece of white cambric that had obviously been a lady's handkerchief was found on the heath together with some yellow material. Some historians were convinced that the handkerchief had been Letty LeGros and that the yellow material was part of a dress she'd been wearing. But no one could prove it.
Until now.
Until now. Until you just described a yellow dress and a white handkerchief. Hello?
Mr. Robert Ripple?
Speaking.
Oh, this is Mrs. David Matson. You don't know me, but...
The wife of the publisher.
Yes, that's right. I'd like to come and see you.
What about?
My husband. And the reason he left me.
My dear Mrs. Matson, I find this conversation most strange. You, a perfect stranger, calling me to discuss your marital problems. Why in the world would you believe that I would be...
I was told to call you.
By whom?
Lon Henderson.
Well, I can't understand why Mr. Henderson referred you to me.
Well, because he's our best friend, and I badgered him into distraction. He finally gave me your name as the one...
He also has the information I have.
That's all I want.
Tell Mr. Henderson I find his putting you on to me cowardly.
Oh, Mr. Ripple, please.
I have no intention, Mrs. Matson, of seeing you or discussing your husband and his actions at any time, now or in the future.
I must thank you, Mr. Ripple, for your courtesy in showing me so much of your part of the museum.
Well, not at all, Mrs. Larson. When the curator called and told me you were interested in becoming a patron of the museum, it was only natural we should try to show you the sort of things in which we spend your money.
Well, and you've impressed me very much so.
If you don't think me impertinent, Mrs. Larson, how much so? Did you have any specific sum for a contribution in mind?
Not precisely. I really need more information. Now, I must return to Boston later today, so... Well, I just want to thank you for making time for me in your busy schedule.
Pleasure.
Oh, really, this picture...
Daguerreotype, Mrs. Larson.
Well, whatever. Now, well, this man, he looks so familiar. Who's he?
A notorious killer. A man named Charles Mason who was hanged in 1841. Now, if we could move on.
Just a moment. Now, this may seem a somewhat strange request, but I would like this daguerreotype.
I beg your pardon.
I'd like to purchase a... Or let me say, I would make a substantial bequest to the museum if I could have this picture.
And why would you want that particular picture, Mrs. Larson? I take it no other will do?
Well, surely I don't have to explain.
Oh,
if
but
I
you
just
do.
Want...
Guard!
What?
Guard!
What are you doing? What?
Calling a guard to escort you out of the building, Mrs. Matson.
Why are you...
And I'd advise you not to make a fuss. Because if you so much as utter another syllable, I'll call the police and have you arrested for impersonating a donor when you had no such intention. Now get out of here.
I honestly wish I could help you, Mrs. Matson, but as I told you before, Mr. Henderson has been on the golf course all afternoon.
But I told you to get a message to him that it was a matter of life and death.
Well, we have tried, Mrs. Matson. I don't know why he hasn't called or even if he received
all right.
a message.
Now, listen, tell him I'm coming out to see him, and he should wait there for me no matter what happens. That picture. That picture. It was exactly the face of David. I've got to find Lon. He's trying to avoid me. It's too dark now for him to be out on the golf course. Oh, ouch. Well, it's gravel. Should have remembered to change my shoes. I think I'll walk on the grass. Who's that? Is there anyone there? I know you're behind that bush. And I'm not in the mood to play any stupid games. Go of me! A knife! Oh, stop!
Oh, Jan, do you realize that guy could have killed you?
I don't know. I don't know why he came at me. But I'm very glad you got there when you did.
Well, I didn't. I missed catching him. Didn't you see his face?
No. He came up from behind me. He circled around the bushes.
Oh, I see. Do you think you should stay in this house alone?
Well, why not? It's my own home.
But, Jan, you're not completely recovered.
I appreciate your concern. They'd never have let me out of the emergency room at the hospital if they didn't think I was okay. The arm is bandaged. It doesn't bother me at all, but you do.
Me?
Why did you send me to Ripple?
Oh. Jan, how much do you know about reincarnation?
You mean the belief that your soul lives on in someone else's body after you die?
Yes.
Well, what's all that got to
do? No, wait. David's involvement with Ripple's book has somehow convinced him that the soul of this 19th century killer, Charles Mason, was in his body.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yes. That's what I thought, too.
Oh, then you believe
Jan,
now...
Jan, please. After reading Ripple's book, Dave told me he felt strangely familiar with all the events that related to Charles Mason. He said he felt as if he'd almost lived them. He went to the museum to talk with Ripple about this strange phenomenon, and then he saw the picture.
And?
Well, you saw it. Can you deny that...
You allowed a resemblance to convince you that David was a reincarnation of a 19th century criminal? I refuse to believe it.
There's more, Jan.
Nothing that you can say will convince me. Reincarnation of... Listen, people have been arguing about whether there really is such a thing as a soul for centuries.
Now listen to me. David looked at that picture and went into some sort of a trance. He recalled actual scenes and incidents from more than 100 years ago.
David is a bright man with a vast store of knowledge. His subconscious must retain his readings from hundreds of books and manuscripts. And then because of some quirk and his vivid imagination, he's able to recall it.
I know. I felt the way you did, and I brought up the subject of self-hypnosis. It was then that David described the clothing of one of Mason's victims. And that's one thing he couldn't have read or heard anywhere.
Then you must believe that David was right to leave me.
Well, he loves you. What else could he have done?
Trusted that love. Trusted our years together. Trusted the strength that's made our marriage work and told me the truth and tried to work it out together.
Well, how do you go about working something like this out? If David really is a...
I'm not going to consider that possibility.
You... have to.
Why?
Because of that bandage you're wearing on your arm.
Bandage? What's that?
Somebody went after you with a knife.
I know that.
And why would anyone want to slash you?
I don't know. We live in a violent world.
No, Jan. This happened at the club. This was no ordinary mugging.
What are you trying to say?
Look, are you sure there wasn't anything familiar about the man who attacked you? Something that might remind you of...
You are trying to make me think it was... David, aren't you? You are trying to make me say it was David. You think it was David, don't you?
Jan, look, please, we have
get
to...
Get out of my house!
Well, please, be reasonable and...
I said it out loud and I meant it. Oh, Lon. Oh, I'm so glad you came. Now, I apologize for my behavior the other night. There was no excuse.
No. I forgive you, Jan. I understand. But what do you want from me now?
To go with me to see Jason Beckwith and tell him everything you know about this strange delusion of David's.
Jason Beckwith?
He's a professor of romance languages at the university. And he's also a highly regarded student of the occult. I shouldn't say student. He's an acknowledged authority.
Jan, have you seen today's paper?
No.
Then you haven't read the story about the woman who was killed in the park last night?
Lon, I promised I wouldn't lose my temper, no matter how many ridiculous things.
Now, hold it. It's not ridiculous. A woman was slashed to death in Hudson Park early this morning by a man with a knife. Now, that's a newspaper story.
I suppose that you don't have a sneaking suspicion that that man with a knife might have been David.
You bet I have.
David is not a killer.
All right, all right. Why don't you call him and ask him where he was last night?
He couldn't kill anyone.
Are you afraid to call him?
Hello?
Oh, David, darling, how are you?
Jan. Look, Jan, if you didn't get the check, I'm sorry, but I really have been bombed out for the past few days. I don't remember...
Bombed out? What kind of talk is that?
Look, Jan, I'm not the guy you knew.
Don't you try to tell me who you are, David. You're talking to the girl who married you.
You just don't know what you're up against.
But I do. I do know.
You know?
I know exactly what you believe, and I also know it's a lot of nonsense. Oh, darling, I want you to come home.
Lon should never have told you. He betrayed me and did you no good. I can't face you now, ever.
David, listen.
Well?
He hung up on me.
Mm-hmm. And what about last night?
He couldn't remember. Well, I guess he must have been drinking. Bombed out was the phrase he used.
Mm, which amounts to admitting that he doesn't have an alibi for last night.
He doesn't need an alibi. David is not a criminal.
He thinks he is?
Well, he's getting a lot of support from some of his best friends.
Jan, please believe I thought it. You weren't at the museum. You didn't see and hear what I...
Jan, you haven't lived with David for 10 years. You think you can ever know David as I do?
Oh, well, how can I answer that?
Don't try. Just come along with me and keep the appointment with Professor Beckwith.
It's not unusual for a wife to believe in her husband. It's also not too startling to find that a husband doesn't believe in himself. However, it's both strange and frightening to find a wife that seems to be willing to reach back into the past to prove her husband's innocence. I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
When you say Budweiser,
when you say Bud, you said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say Bud, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best.
When you say Bud, you've said the words that means you like to do it all. When you say Bud, it means you want the beer that's got a taste that's number one. When you say Bud, you tell the world you know what makes it all the way. When you say Bud, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers.
You
said
it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
How many things can your family do together? Go to a movie? Go to a circus? Go on a picnic? Go on a vacation? Face it, in today's America, family fun is hard to come by. And with busy schedules, just getting the family together is not an easy thing to do. How would you like to have a little family fun every week? How would you like to learn together? How would you like to grow together? And how would you like to help your son get an edge on growing up? Cub Scouting is helping families like yours be a family. It sure helped ours. Today's Cub Scout program is just as much for families as it is for boys. So when your son wants to join a Cub Scout pack, remember to take along the whole family. That's what Cub Scouting is all about. For the Cub Scout pack nearest you, call the Boy Scouts of America. They're in the white pages of your phone book.
against the power of death. The power of good against evil. Most of us like to believe that good will triumph. But very few of us are ever asked to put our belief to the acid test. Janice is doing just that. She refuses to believe the evidence that her husband David is the reincarnation of a 19th century killer. And she and her husband's best friend have come to an appointment with an expert on reincarnation and the occult.
Remarkable. Most interesting. In fact, one of the most remarkable stories I've ever heard.
Professor, you can take my word for it. I saw just what I told you. Nothing came from my imagination.
Oh, my dear Henderson, do stop calling me Professor and do stop being so defensive. I know you told me the truth.
You don't mean you believe David is a reincarnation of that killer?
My dear Mrs. Matson.
Jan.
My dear Jan, before I can answer that question and before you panic, you have to understand more about the whole theory of reincarnation.
That's why we're here.
Now, reincarnation is part of some, but not all, Oriental religions. The belief that the soul needs to be reborn. And final liberation and release from this need is the highest possible achievement.
But why is there a need to be reborn?
Because of impurities in the soul.
Oh, or sin, Professor? I'm sorry, Mr. Beckwith.
The final liberation of the soul, Henderson, is possible only for a human being who has attained purity of thought.
And if one doesn't have this purity of thought?
Then a new life is generated from an old, just as a new candle is lighted from an old one.
A new life, you said?
That's right.
Completely new and completely different? Trying, perhaps, to rid yourself of impurities?
Possibly.
Well, then, how do you account for the almost total recall that Dave had for the events and crimes connected with Charles Mason?
One explanation would be that he remembers them.
But if David was striving for a new life...
I didn't say there wouldn't be traces and memories of another life. And I believe David has surfaced these memories. But that doesn't necessarily prove David Matson is the reincarnation of Charles Mason.
Well, how else could Dave have known about...
He could have experienced the things he recalled as a spectator.
Oh, no. No way, Beckwith. I was in the museum and you weren't. I saw and heard a deep emotional involvement on Dave's part. He was no spectator.
Henderson, you've just put your finger on the single most significant bits of evidence in this whole strange history. In fact, it's the cornerstone of the theory I'm beginning to form.
Come on, Ron.
Now, look, I feel like a criminal.
Now, don't be silly.
But I'm setting David up. He thinks he's going to see me and wait till you see the look he gives me when you walk into his office.
Come on.
Where are you going?
We're going in the back way.
Oh.
If I pass the desk, the receptionist will phone David.
Oh. You know, Jan, you're really something else. I just hope that
just
David...
Just let me worry about David, Ron.
All right, Dave, I'm sorry we used the back door, but...
It was
Jan...
my idea.
Jan. Why didn't you call to tell...
David, you look awful. You look so tired. You know, you could use a vacation up at the lodge. We could...
Jan, how I wish I could... That it was as simple as that. I'd love to go away with you for a while, just the two of us.
Well, we can't.
What? I thought...
I mean, we've got some work to do first.
Work?
Yes, on your head. Now, listen.
Lon, what is this?
She's your wife, and she's great. And she has met with Professor Jason Beckwith, and he's agreed to work out an experiment.
What kind of an experiment?
Well, I think Jan had better explain it, since she's also going to be... part of it.
Sorry, Jan. It sounds too risky.
But, darling, I've told you. It's a controlled experiment.
Who's controlling it? Beckwith?
Yes. And Lon will be there, too.
The plain truth, Jan, is that I'm afraid.
Well, of course. And you're afraid to come home. And you're afraid to see me alone. And you're afraid to face the night. Is that the way you want to live for the rest of your life?
I may have to.
But don't you see? The experiment offers us a way out. I know you're not Charles Mason in any way.
The way you say it, you almost make me believe it.
Well, it's true. So trust me.
Oh, I trust you. It's me I'm worried about. How's your arm?
Oh, it's much better. You can see it's out of the sling.
Police haven't found who attacked you yet.
They're working on it. Now, when do you want me to arrange for this?
You're badly hurt.
No, it's just a surface cut. Now, listen, David, darling.
Excuse me. I'll be back in a moment. I'm not feeling...
David?
I'll be with you in a minute, Jan.
Ron, go after him.
What?
Go on, hurry. David! Oh, darling, don't take...
Put that gun down, Dave.
Don't! No!
Why did you grab my hand, Ron? Why didn't you let me kill myself?
Because that's no answer.
You asked about the alternative, and this is the one that takes care of everything.
Oh. Are you sure about that?
What? Who are you?
This is Jason Beckwith, darling. We sent for him after
your stupidity.
I knew exactly what I was doing, and I knew why.
Then explain it to us.
I don't have to explain anything.
You don't find it difficult to believe that the soul of a man... dead more than 100 years, has been reborn in your body?
It's been pretty well proven to me.
And because you're afraid of the soul of this murderer will force you into killing your wife or some other women, you decided to kill yourself.
That's about it.
And what happens to the immortal soul?
What?
I asked, what do you think will happen to that soul that didn't die on the gallows at Tyburn in 1841? What happens... when David Matson blows his brains out, what happens to that soul?
I don't know.
Think about it. Does it go on to inhabit another body and continue killing?
I wouldn't know that. Do you?
No, but I'd like to try and find out if you'll help me and go along with the experiment I have in mind.
Want to go ahead with this, Dave?
Yes.
Okay. But I'm under orders to inform you that this will be the last experiment into the past conducted on these premises.
And the professor's briefed you on what we hope to accomplish here tonight?
No, not completely. I assume it's a continuation of your trips into the past.
With some additions, Mr. Ripple.
Those marbles you have in that bag?
Right.
Interesting. I assume they're going to play some part in the proposed experiment.
Oh, they are. As will the clothing I have in this box.
Is that a knife?
It is.
With a sharp blade?
As sharp as I could get it.
Don't you think that...
I believe that on the top floor of this museum, there's a long, narrow corridor which runs the length of the building.
Correct. Connects two rarely used storerooms. I must warn you, it's probably very stuffy up there.
Is there a window we can open?
Well... Yes,
but... Good. With the exception of Jan, I suggest we all get up there quickly. Excellent, Mr. Ripple. A corridor just as you described it. And now the window's been opened, and we're all gathered here ready to start.
I thought Jan was... She told me she had to be part of the experiment.
Oh, she'll be along later, David. There were some things we had to keep from you.
Ripple, is there any way you could light this corridor better?
It's fine the way it is. I'll move down the corridor. Can you see this?
Something shining.
The knife is quite visible to anyone with normal eyesight, Professor.
Good. Now, Henderson, if you'll station yourself about halfway down the corridor and wait there... And don't touch the marbles.
Oh, don't worry. Never was any good at shooting marbles, Beckwith.
Where do you want me, Professor?
As we agreed, wherever you think you'd serve the museum's interest best.
I think I'll stay near you.
Fine. Now, what we have is the corridor. Perfect view. And along the corridor, gleaming knife. David, you stand on my right... Mr. Ripple, that puts you on my left.
Mm-hmm.
And we all agree the corridor is quite empty. Now, Mr. Ripple, may I have the daguerreotype?
There you are.
Thanks. Now, David, look closely at this face. The face of a man named Charles Mason. And David, as I drop the marbles one by one on the stone floor, they'll start to bounce. And bounce, bounce, bounce back through the years. Listen to them bouncing. Bouncing down the long corridor of time. And the years slide by, slide by, alive with the echoes of the past. Do you see them, David?
I see them and hear them.
Shh, Ripple.
I'm walking. Walking along near the top of the hill on the heath. And I see a single horse. He's silhouetted for a moment against the moon. He comes riding, riding, and he stops.
He stops, and he hides so carefully in the bushes.
Beckwith, for heaven's sake, what's happening? That's Ripple. He's under two. He thinks he's there.
They stand stone still, the man and the horse. The bushes hide them. A lady. A lady. She's walking. She has a cape with a hood. I can't see her face.
Jan, be careful.
Pretty lace and pretty face. I know help against sharp steel.
No, it's Ripple. He's got the knife. He's down the corridor. Jan, look out!
I've got him. You're not going to touch him.
The window, Dave. Watch the window.
Dave, has the knife!
Help me!
Robert Ripple was pure evil.
He was also Charles Mason, wasn't he?
Perhaps. Perhaps he just saw an opportunity to destroy a good man when he discovered that daguerreotype and realized the man in it looked exactly like you. He simply took a nameless photo and gave it a name.
And gave me the horrors. But, Professor, isn't there any chance of finding out who the man in that picture really was? I'd like to know his real name.
Oh, David, my darling. Let's just live in the 20th century. I admit it's difficult enough, but it's our very own.
Here we are in the 20th century, and I have a little parlor game for you to play. Imagine yourself as some famous character in history whom you know and admire. Okay? Now, close your eyes and think hard and imagine yourself alive back in those days. And as you think, you may see some pictures in your mind that you've never seen before. Try it. I'll be back shortly.
There's a fresh new spirit sweeping the land. A free spirit that demands good products. Products that satisfy your sense of good taste and desire for economy. But above all, products that perform. Buick has been touched by this spirit. And this year, our crisply designed, solidly built Buicks will bring joy even to the most demanding of free spirits. The 1975 Buicks, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Once upon a time, there came to pass a new law, and great changes came over the people. They were happy and busied themselves at work they enjoyed. They were kind to the earth, and it gave back to them. No one had to lock doors or put fences around their land. Everyone had enough to eat. The sick and the aged were cared for. The people stood proud and tall.
In the land of make-believe, there were no poor. The Campaign for Human Development is working to make the same thing happen in our real world.
Campaign for Human Development, United States Catholic Conference.
I find this whole question of reincarnation fascinating. But there's an area that's not very well covered in the books and essays that have been written. And that is the question of animals and their souls. Do they possess souls? And indeed, do they return in some form as some other animal? Or, which I don't like to believe, are those of us who sin greatly reduced to becoming animals before we can stop trying to be reborn? Our cast included Shepard Strudwick, Marion Seldes, William Redfield, Alon Clark, and Chris Gampel. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
They are talking.
They're fine people, Mabel. It doesn't hurt us.
Yeah, well, some of them even think your wings are fake. You just stick them on that way. That you're really some kind of a nut.
Well, let them think what they want.
Everhard?
Yes, dear?
Sit down.
Huh?
Please. And I don't want you to get upset or excited or anything.
Well, when did I ever get excited?
And don't interrupt, please.
I wouldn't think of it.
Well, my patience is at an end, Everhard. This cannot go on in one way or another. We've got to find a way to get rid of those awful wings.
We can't possibly do that.
Why can't we? They're embarrassing. They're expensive. They're useless. They're making us the butt of unfunny jokes from everyone in the neighborhood. And what's more, they're getting away, Everhard. Everhard Edwards, those wings must go.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
For CBS Radio News in progress. Next on KIXI Seattle.
Negotiation with Israel, but he might have to wait for a parallel negotiation to start between Israel and the Palestinians over the West Bank. What Kissinger learned after two long talks with Sadat was that Egypt is ready to proceed. Kissinger now knows, or at least he thinks he does, what's possible and what's realistic. A framework for negotiation is emerging, but Kissinger is not now pressing for a quick deal. He wants to talk with King Hussein, with Syria's President Sadat, and with the Israelis, and then let everyone consider the full implications of Rabat before proceeding to the next phase of negotiations. Probably in early December, when Kissinger may return to the Middle East once again. Marvin Gall, CBS News, Amman.
I'll have more news in a moment.
Time Magazine, what's in it for you this week? Cover story, a timely briefing on the new force in the Middle East, the Palestinians.
And on Yasser Arafat, chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization.
Palestine, says Arafat, is the cement that holds the Arab world together.
Or the explosive that blows it apart.
This week, Time studies this nation of refugees.
Its claims for justice.
Its history.
Its strengths and weaknesses.
Its terrorists.
And its men of moderation.
In an exclusive interview, Arafat talks about Israel and oil.
The U.S. in the Middle East.
And the danger of war.
As Time's report suggests, war will continue until the Israelis are willing to talk to Arafat.
And until Arafat is willing to talk to them.
Also in Time this week, a major report on the world food crisis.
What went wrong with the Green Revolution?
How have inexplicable changes in the world's weather devastated once fertile land?
What is the geography of hunger?
And what choices are open to the 1,000 delegates meeting in Rome this week in history's first global effort to confront the problem of hunger?
Two vital problems.
Explored in depth.
This week in Time, the weekly news magazine.
Pick up a copy today. President Ford met on Wednesday with Senate Democratic leader Mansfield. Both leaders pledged to work toward cooperation between Congress and the White House following the Democrats' massive gains at the polls on Tuesday. Although the Democrats did manage to capture a two-thirds majority in the House, Mansfield did not claim the party achieved a veto-proof Congress.
We never had a veto-proof Congress. It's an impossibility. What we hope we will be able to develop is an inflation-proof Congress, but it's something which neither the President nor the Congress can do alone, but which I hope we will do cooperatively, and we'll do our best.
Mansfield received a list from President Ford, a list of pending bills on which the President wants action after the new Congress reconvenes later this month. The big Democratic gains in Congress could mean there will be little or no action on major and controversial proposals. Political observers feel major decisions on social and economic problems will be held off until the new and more liberal Congress convenes in January. Despite the big Democratic victories in Tuesday's elections, Treasury Secretary William Simon says there will be no basic changes in President Ford's economic proposals, including the proposed 5% surtax. Simon says Republican losses were not triggered by the state of the economy. Simon blamed what he termed the repugnance of the political system. More news after this word.
If you enjoy wine with your meals, here's something you should know about wine before meals.
Before then, the time to think about some Duvernay, to drink before a meal by day or night, it helps to whet your appetite. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Duvernay.
Most wines go with your meals, but Duvernay goes before. Think of it as an appetizer, a wine that helps to whet your appetite before lunch. Before dinner at cocktail time. Before whatever you've got cooking. Dubonnet Before. Made to make what comes after that much better. Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course.
Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for
Dubonnet. A product of USA. Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Beverly Harrell has failed in her attempt to become the first madam in the Nevada legislature. She runs a legal bordello known as the Cottontail Ranch. It's in a remote area of Nevada called Lita Junction. She ran for the state assembly until the wee hours of Wednesday morning. It looked like Beverly was going to win. She was way ahead of her opponent, but late returns gave victory to her opponent. Her opponent is Don Moody. Commenting on her loss in the race, Ms. Harrell said, "It looks like some people may still be calling me madam." This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
KIXI Seattle at 6 minutes past 11.